Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by my psychic and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy and my keyboard suffering friend, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hello, Windy.
You're a different machine today, Nathan. Why is that?
Because my keyboard thinks that the Alt key is being held down at all times, rendering my laptop completely useless.
It makes me wonder what you've been using your keyboard for. Do you eat a lot of biscuits when you're using your keyboard?
Yeah, crumbs. It may be my eating habits, but I think what it may well be the case is my tendency for long hair and long beards getting all off on
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably not going to be helped by a period of being stuck inside, I imagine. Before we start, last time we podcasted, I spoke about my dad being unwell, and a listener got in touch with me about his mum, and I just wanted to sort of say all the very best to his mum, Carol Walker. It sounds like she's on the road to recovery, and I'm really glad to hear that. And I just wanted to apologise to anyone who was triggered by things I was saying about my dad's situation. I know this is obviously a really difficult time for a lot of people. I've had a family member has sadly passed away today with this COVID-19, and it's horrible. It's sort of, it's very real. It's very close to everyone. And, you know, frankly, we're all going to have people close to us, yeah, who are going to sadly get very, very ill, and some of whom will die. And I just wanted to sort of, yeah, send my thoughts out to anyone who's suffering with this. And I'm really sorry if people thought that I was sort of almost taking it lightly through my dad being a bit better. And that certainly wasn't my intention. There's lots to talk about. Some stuff in relation to COVID-19 and Spurs' response to it. And I think we should start there because that's been the main talking point over the last week or so. So, I mean, we can say that Spurs' response to this virus has not been great. From Delhi's video, which was kind of mocking it in the really early stages, and by God, with how things have deteriorated so quickly, I'm sure he probably feels even worse at that now, to the club furloughing its staff, many of whom are fairly low paid, and then to Mourinho being caught out in public in a park, not respecting social distancing measures. Where to start? Let's talk about the following, because that's the big one. So essentially, what we know, according to Dan Kilpatrick in The Standard, is that Spurs have imposed 20% pay cuts on all 550 non-playing staff, with around 40% set to be furloughed. Bardi, firstly, what's it like for you as someone who's been offered furlough and whose colleagues have been offered furlough? What's it like in this situation at the moment for you?
It's quite uncertain. It really does kind of bring up the uncertainty, and all of a sudden you start to question the security of your job. So I got offered furlough because everybody gets offered it, but it was kind of suggested for me not to take it, and I didn't take it. But for large parts of my organisation, they've had no choice but to accept it. And immediately what that does is it gets people very concerned about the future. Even though your pay, 80% of it is secured for a certain period of time, it still does bring up questions and anxiety about what the future holds for you. The regular question we're seeing people faced with is, if I'm not needed now, will I be needed in the future? And that's the big problem of it. I understand why the company I work for have done it. It's a charity. Our shops are closed, our events are shut. and we've got no money coming into the charity. So that offer, that opportunity to have the government pay for workers that we would otherwise have had to make redundant or get rid of, it has helped them, and it's helped us, and it's helped them. So there's a really positive thing to it as well, that it's keeping people secure in a time where if they lost their job, they wouldn't be able to find another one. And it's taken advantage of the government, which is an offer that the government have made. And I can totally understand why Spurs have decided to take that opportunity. Whether or not it's right is a different question, but I can understand why they've taken the government's money in this instance.
So this is it, isn't it? You know, Daniel Levy is a businessman, and he needs to make the best business decisions for the club. And if he thinks the best business decision is to accept some government support to create, or to not lose out essentially to other clubs, to potentially create competitive advantage, then from a business perspective, that's his justification. The issue is the ethical issue of whether an organisation like Tottenham, which makes huge amounts of money every year, is really the kind of organisation that should be even offered this scheme in the first place. That's the problem. And then having been offered this, having there being no restrictions in place as to the size of the company or turnover that could take the government up on the scheme, should Levy be going down this route when other football club owners have chosen not to? I find it really problematic, but I'm kind of tempted to say hate the game, not the player in some respects.
Mm-hmm. I think you're totally right. And a lot of time it is footballers that seem, they take the brunt of it. It's give soldiers footballers wages. There's quite a few businesses out there, Starbucks, Topman. There's a lot of companies out there who've done things quite badly, not paid taxes and everything else, but they seem to have escaped all of this, whereas all of a sudden football clubs are now the real enemy. Daniel Levy has these 550 staff, I don't know who they are, cleaners, whatever, they've got their wages covered. They don't need to be concerned about their future. And I understand that there's two ways to look at it. Tottenham Hotspur have taken advantage of a government offer. That money is there for companies like Tottenham, like many other companies, to use, and they've just done it. And that's, Daniel Levy is just been Daniel Levy.
It's a very cold-headed business decision, and I struggle with the ethics of making that decision, to be honest. But I don't think that it should have been Levy's choice to make, and I think that's the point that I would make. Yeah. Nathan, do you want to present the sort of ethical argument?
Well, no, I agree with what you're saying, which is that it shouldn't be Levy's choice to make. Essentially, the decision to sort of hand out a pay cut across the board, it is what bothers me much more than the furloughing. People say, you know, like Spurs are a highly profitable business, they can afford to sort of carry their staff for quite a while, but carrying their staff and carrying their playing staff while bringing in none of the gate money, TV money, etc., like, they will very quickly start to make a significant loss, which is not like a woe is me, but that really where the assets lie are in the possession of Joe Lewis. And yes, his company will start to make a loss, but that will not directly affect him, versus if we get the entire staff onto a furlough scheme, and not just at Tottenham, but across the board, and do a much better job of taxing Joe Lewis and the people like him, then we're keeping not just the people at Tottenham safe and fed and clothed, but people up and down the country. And I think that is where the focus for me. For me, the furloughing isn't the issue. I do think that Spurs, okay, can probably, at least for the time being, afford to top up the furlough, which is what Liverpool were looking at doing for a while, which is, yes, allow the government to take 80% of the wage, but then cover the remaining 20% themselves. What Spurs have done is the opposite of that, and furloughed who they can and reduced the rest instead. That's what bothers me.
Yeah. No, I completely appreciate what you're saying there about making sure that everyone pays their way in society. At risk of, I mean, I don't think I really want to get into a party political discussion, because frankly, I think us all sort of patting each other on the back in agreement would not be a great listen for many people. And, you know, many of our listeners will hold different political views to us, and I don't want to turn them off with potential one-sided discussion. But I think what we've done there is hopefully give a balanced view of what the options were available, and why Levy might have made this decision. it's a really difficult one to talk about, I think, without getting kind of quite emotionally invested in. And this has led to a bit of an outpouring, I would say, on social media. So anytime the club tweets now, it's met with hundreds of responses saying, pay your staff. And in one sense, I think that's a good thing. But in other, like in another sense, that horse has bolted. And if people suddenly care now about these sorts of societal issues, then I wonder why they've not been so engaged politically before. But there we go.
I've just got one more point on the. So I've also taken a 20% pay cut, and I'm happy. I'm not happy, obviously, but I understand why I've done it. I'm happy to take the pay cut if it's long term, if it guarantees the future of my role, and it guarantees the future of the organization I work for. I'm more than happy to do that. I can see the problem is when you work for a charity and you work for a giant conglomerate like Tottenham, that's where the problem comes with that 20% is. Do Tottenham really need to take 20% off those wages of those individuals to secure their long-term future? I don't know. We know Spurs are hurting. We know every football club is hurting. And I'm pretty sure the longer this lockdown continues, more companies will start doing the same, asking employees to take a cut to secure their future. That's the problem here. Do those 500 people need to take it to support Spurs? I don't know. I did it because I'm more than happy to secure the future of my company.
Yeah, and I think I also work for a large organisation, which is somewhere between it's basically in the public sector, but I think there's a fair chance that I will end up taking a pay cut at some point. And like you, I would be happy to do so to support the organisation I work for and its staff. It's not an easy thing to have imposed on you in any way. The logical next part of a discussion when it comes to Spurs is talking about the players' wages. And that's because that is the largest cost to the club, aside from stadium debt at the moment, obviously. So this is another really difficult conversation because there's lots of different factors that come into this. On the one hand, you've got players earning thousands and thousands of pounds every week who are currently at home, able to do a bit of training at home, but essentially not working, in inverted commas, because they're not playing matches, they're not coming to training every day. You've got players' union, PFA, who are trying to negotiate some kind of deal with, I presume, the Premier League and the FA about what kind of cut in salary would be appropriate for players. You've got people who are working on the front line in the NHS who are getting paid very little comparative to football players. And so that creates a kind of a toxic atmosphere in which this discussion is being held. And then you've got the players themselves. And they've done a good thing today, and we'll come to talk about that shortly. But Nathan, how do you feel about people who want players to take pay cuts, who think the PFA are delaying things deliberately? Where do you stand on all this?
This conversation frustrates me immensely because it's completely blind of any sense. So footballers make up sort of, in this country, 2% of the millionaire population, which is to say there's plenty of other people who are considerably wealthier than footballers, who can definitely carry as much of this burden as the rest of them. But the talking point, not just on this podcast, not just within the football sphere, but greater in society, there's so much focus on football players when that makes no sense to me, because partly because, okay, footballers are one of the few members of rich people who, like, they are actually the creators of their profit. So they are the labor, they are the talent, they are the product, rather than simply owning the mechanisms by which those are made in other industries. But also, I think that the reason the focus is on footballers is because people like Matt Hancock, the health secretary, has put the focus on football players because they're working class. They're not the sort of accepted rich. They're not the previous rich. They are where the papers and where, you know, members of the existing cabinet push the focus, because that turns it away from the systems that have created the injustice in the first place.
And also, in some cases, people they went to school with.
A lot
of our politicians on both sides of the political sphere went to public schools and have friends and colleagues who are now chief execs of companies who it would be logical to be pointing the finger towards as well as footballers. Or in many cases, probably not as well as footballers, frankly. You're right, I think, to point out the fact that this group of largely working class people, often from minority backgrounds, feels like an easy target, and it feels very wrong-headed to me to be for government members of government to be pointing the finger on literal kind of press conferences that are being held daily. For footballers to even come up in that conversation just feels awful and totally the wrong thing to be happening. But there is a sense of seethe as a result of this on social media, which I'm hoping some of the actions of this Players Together group today will help sort of disseminate a bit. We'll see. Before we talk about that, I just want to talk briefly about Mourinho and his activity in taking Ndombele out for a training session and then being joined by Sessegnon and Sanchez. Someone's made a really interesting observation here. It was Michael, I think it's Vida. He says, does the Mourinho and Ndombele training session give more hope that he's not going to be frozen out? which didn't even occur to me, but yes, absolutely. Like, if you take that as a standalone thing, then I think, that's probably a really good sign. I was really disappointed when I saw this story that Mourinho had not respected the social distancing rules, because he is a role model, he's a figurehead, he's a public figure, and you need everyone who is a role model or a public figure to be doing their bit for society. And to see him sort of not was very upsetting to me. How do you feel about that, Bardi?
I got a question on this. So Mourinho invited Ndombele out. So you're allowed to exercise once a day. So Mourinho and Ndombele were out, the two of them. And what they were closer than the 2 meters, because if you go out and exercise, you're allowed to, but you have to keep your distance from everybody else.
So you're allowed to go out with people from your own household and exercise. Okay. You shouldn't be meeting up with other people from other households to exercise.
Even if you're keeping distance, just because I think it's more about sort of the approach, the underlying approach and clarity of message than it is about if Mourinho and Ndombele, happen to go to the same park at the same time and stay a decent distance away from each other, there's very, very little risk there. But if you simplify and clarify the message and clarify sort of the underlying approach and mentality around it is don't go and meet people who aren't from your households, that just makes it so much clearer, so much easier for everyone to follow. And is really the only way that we're going to cut down on the spread. I get it. Like, we're going to see, absolutely. There are going to be lots and lots of situations like this that won't make headlines, where people have gone, well, I'm just happening to go to the park at the same time as my friend who I haven't seen in weeks and I desperately miss is going to have to go to the park, and we're not even going to get within 2 meters of each other, and we are doing the exercise that we're pretending that we're out for, actually. I really sympathize with anyone doing that, because the temptation is so great when, if you live near someone that you deeply miss. And Mourinho especially is like a workaholic amongst workaholics, right? All managers are clearly deeply obsessed with working 20-hour days, and I think Mourinho is even more obscene than that. And so if he lives around the corner from this player that he has, who is this incredible mercurial talent that he needs to get him fit somehow, and there's a park between them, it's so easy to see how that gets done. And I think we'll probably see this with other clubs, with other players, with other situations like that, and not just within football. Outside of football, we will see, more celebrities, more politicians, more people misbehaving. I think that will probably, at least for a while, also die down in a few weeks as the backlash sort of helps keep people away.
I guess it's more frustrating because the club have done a really good job of showing how the training sessions can be held remotely. Yep. So they've posted pictures of Mourinho and his team running training sessions with everyone logged in via Zoom or Skype or whatever, and following what was being done. And I thought that seemed to be working really well, and it's kind of, it keeps everyone in touch. It creates still this, it maintains this sort of sense of camaraderie and the bond between the players, which is obviously a really good thing. And to see him sort of out there in full
in
coach
the purple,
training kit,
yeah.
I mean, it was just, I found it really embarrassing. So we had a couple of questions off the back of all of this. Call Me Kenneth says, how do I balance my insatiable desire to watch Spurs play again and the fact that the club don't deserve my financial support? And Andrew Briggs says, would any of the club's recent behaviour or actions ever cause you to rethink how you support Spurs in the future? I'll start with you, Bardi.
I mean, I've been thoroughly enjoying watching old games, even like famous defeats. I watched the 5-4 defeat at White Hart Lane. I watched the 1981 FA Cup replay against Man City, which was a real eye opener, because you know the room, you know the legends of Hoddle and Ozzie Ardiles and even Graham Roberts, who was incredible in that match, and just go back and just catch up on these games and take the opportunity to watch football matches that you would never normally watch. So I do that by not paying any money into Tottenham and watching people who've probably illegally added these these films onto YouTube.
How about you, Nathan? Does this sort of ethical conundrum contribute to how you feel about Spurs, and does it make you want to act any differently as a customer?
Yeah, it's difficult. It's really I really like the third kit from this year, and I was going to wait because the price has dramatically come down at the end of the season. I was going to wait and buy it sort of around now, and I can't justify giving money to Spurs, even though, okay, it doesn't directly go to them. He's a shirt sponsor, blah, 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 so on. You get the idea. I don't want to pump up their shirt sale numbers to reflect future sponsors. Like, at least when you know that, like, money is going towards crown staff and stewards and all of that, there's some justification there. But with that completely removed, like, it is so hard to give Spurs money. Like, it's so hard. Like, the club give out their latest sort of update on where things are going, and you click on the page and the shop advert comes up, and it's hard to not, like, feel anything but disgust at the idea of following that link onto the shop. So I get it. It's really difficult. It's really frustrating. It might be frustrating for a lot of people to sort of resume their fanship of Spurs when things get going, depending on how the club continue to handle this situation going forward. And I'm not going to sort of pretend, I'm not going to lie and say, well, I'm going to abandon Spurs now, because, like, I'm really tied in with all of this stuff that the three of us do and everything else as well. But I do completely empathise with anyone else who is turned away from this club. And I say, okay, you know, fair enough. I completely understand that. Don't abandon the sport, though. Find other ways to enjoy the sport. You know, find a lower league side. And I would encourage people who feel that way to go about changing the way that they enjoy this sport. I sympathise with that.
I mean, if Spurs came back after this break and they started smashing teams immediately with Kane and Son, that would also be a way to get everybody back.
It's true.
Well. Winning football matches fixes everything in the world.
We're so fickle, aren't we? I think also Spooky on Twitter earlier gave a nice kind of way out, which is to say that Spurs to him is us. Spurs is the community around the club. Yeah. It's the matches in history. It's not the businessmen that currently run the club. It's not even the players necessarily who are playing in that shirt right now. Spurs is what's gone before, and
it's whatever the fans say that it is.
Exactly. And I think that is a cop out in some ways, but it gives you a way out of this equation. I mean, there are so many other companies to boycott.
True.
Who do awful things. And if you're someone that boycotts companies that whose ethics you don't agree with, then perhaps you would consider giving up on Spurs. I mean, ultimately, it's everyone's individual choice to do that. And I would respect anyone who chooses to do that, because it's you're making life harder for yourself. So, yeah, that takes some doing.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We'll be right back.
I did want to talk about the players together thing. I think it's really interesting. But before we do, I want to go back briefly to the issue of furloughing, because Matt Law published an article where he spoke about us furloughing scouts and analysts. And I found that interesting. And I tweeted about it because I thought that was a really strange decision from Spurs. These are people who could work from home. And this is one area where I've been frustrated about the sort of lack of competitive advantage we've had previously in the transfer market through perhaps not using data as efficiently as other clubs, or not using a scouting network as well as other clubs. Nathan, did you have any views on why we might do this?
So I read the idea that sort of we've prepared our summer and we're done for our summer, therefore we're not in desperate need. And like, we should have done our summer by now. Like, we should have, like, these are the positions we need. Here are the first five options for every position. Here's, if this comes up, we have this option. If we can't get this type of player, then there's this other type of player, in which case we change how we approach this and buy this third type of player as well, sort of thing. Absolutely, all that work should be done, but the work continues. So, I am a football scout who works from home, right? And a lot of my friends are football scouts who work at least partially from home, and their work and my work is, at the moment at least, continuing as strong as ever, is if not stronger. So the idea that Spurs would just stop scouting suddenly is pretty surprising to me.
When I tweeted it, people were coming back saying, yeah, but I mean, they just will be doing it anyway, won't they?
They will just, like, be doing it anyway.
You're not gonna stop a football man doing his work. I'm like, the whole point of the furloughing scheme is you're legally not meant to be doing any work. You are not meant to do any work for that company. Otherwise, the company can't claim back the money from the government. So if they're doing work and furloughed, then they're breaking the law. So there's that. But also, like, you're quite, like, you're spot on. And this tallies with my thoughts, and I'm glad you've said it. We're surely missing a trick. This is the time, if other clubs are furloughing staff and reducing their scouting activity, then we should be doubling down and going in even harder, ready for the summer. Because particularly if we've got less money to spend than we would otherwise have had, we need to make sure we've identified players who are under the radar or undervalued by the market. Okay, so we will talk about players together, which I read this morning and I genuinely sort of welled up a little bit when I was reading the letter. I understand that this is being led by Troy Deeney, Jordan Henderson and Harry Maguire, and they are all fantastic people doing this. So what they've done is get together with all of the Premier League clubs and many of the players within the clubs, and they've set up a charitable scheme basically where they're going to be ensuring that money gets to the groups at the moment who need it the most. And this is completely separate from what the PFA is working on. So this, I think, is just them dipping into their pockets and giving essentially to charity to support the efforts against COVID-19. Buddy, were you chuffed to read this, as chuffed to read this as I was?
Yeah, it's great how many people have started turning to help the NHS. Where I work for, a lot of our researchers and clinicians and people who work in the labs have all returned to NHS. A lot of our labs, which we do research in, have turned into COVID-19 research facilities, as well as COVID-19 testing facilities. And it's great to see the football players taking this upon themselves as well to get involved and give something back.
How about you, Nathan? How does this make you feel?
Yeah, it's excellent. And I'm not surprised that we see this from the football player community. Yeah, I guess probably partially under the outside pressure of the nonsense coming out of Matt Hancock and everywhere else as well. But I also think that it is, you know, footballers are people who are considerably more involved in their communities. And again, as we mentioned before, they are working class people almost entirely. So this is much more in their nature than, again, comparable people on similar wages whose money is, you know, kept offshore and so on. So yes, this is really heartwarming, but it also makes me frustrated that they are both almost alone in this activity and also reprimanded despite this activity.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing we didn't discuss in relation to all of this is the PR element, and I think Spurs' response has been a complete PR disaster. Other clubs have come out of this looking really good, I think, and there's something to be said for having good PR around all of this. I'm sure that's not the case with the Players Together thing, because it seems just like a genuinely lovely thing to have done, and I'm sure there'll be a Premier League wage cut across the board once the PFA have negotiated some kind of deal as well, and that'll be on top of this gesture. And Jordan Henderson's having a hell of a season on and off the pitch. What a guy. Yeah. He just seems like such a good bloke. The other interesting thing that cropped up was Toby Alderweireld's agent, who I think was writing in The Guardian, and he essentially said that players should be able to leave for free if their wages are cut. So I'm going to read the direct quote. Clubs now asking to reduce player salaries undermine the principle of contractual stability. If clubs insist on a wage reduction, players should be put in the same situation as any regular worker. Clubs reducing their players' wages should accept that the players can terminate their employment for free, and these clubs should no longer be able to ask for a transfer fee if the player would like to leave. Bardi, what did you make of that?
I mean, he makes a fair point. As Nathan keeps mentioning, quite rightly, football players are, just because they are football players, doesn't mean that they have any less rights, and doesn't mean that we can demand anything more of them. If you are offered a 20% pay cut, you do have the option to have your contract terminated there and then. And I don't see what the problem is. It's, once again, it's made a headline because it's a footballer and it's Tottenham, and it's just part of the narrative. But you can immediately terminate your contract. And I mean, it could be worse. I think there are rules out there where you can have your contract terminated, and if your organisation could then re-employ you on the same contract but with 20% less. It's just there are worse scenarios out there. I think it's a fair enough point to make.
Nathan, how about you? What do you make of this?
Yeah, thing? I mean, yeah, same as Bardi, really. It's less his opinion than it is sort of the contractual reality. So footballers aren't really employees. They are independent contractors. And if you breach that contract, then they are no longer tied to you and they can leave as they wish. And there are plenty of players, I'm sure, who will be sort of looking at that and thinking, well, this is my chance to leave to the club of my dreams and all of that kind of stuff. So I get that. And that is why clubs haven't simply themselves reduced players' wages. They're asking the players to reduce their own wages for them. I mean, I don't think that we will see players leaving. I don't think we will see clubs cutting players, not at the top end of the table anyway, top end of the pyramids, as it were. But that is why the power is essentially in the players' hands to deal with as they wish.
These pesky Belgians and their football contracts, you know. I mean, I was referred to Bart Bosman, Jean-Marc Bosman. It is, you know, it's a good point. It's a human rights thing. It's a contract of employment, yeah. And it's just something which is there available for footballers to do.
Interesting. Okay, so we've got a couple of questions before we end. First one comes from Kev Green. He says, how come Nathan can play FIFA pretty much the same way Spurs actually play? It's uncanny. Nathan, what's this mean?
So I'm playing out the... I missed last weekend because I hurt my back and I was just in bed in pain all day. But next weekend I'll be back on it again, playing FIFA, playing my way out of the season. I'm not even sure who's next, but I played Sheffield last. I'm playing on the hardest difficulty, which is why I'm reflecting actual Spurs pretty well, sort of just about edging out wins over bottom of the table sides. I lost to West Ham, I think, or I drew with West Ham, I can't remember already, but I'm struggling along, and I think that, you know, people don't want fiction from the continuation of the season. They want a realistic representation of how Spurs are going to play it out. So I will be pushing on. And also, I tweeted this, but I think it's a story worth telling. So I was playing a game on my PC. I was playing Rocket League on my PC with some other members of the football Twitter community. And I used my PlayStation 4 controller for that. And I plug it into my PC. And as I picked up the controller, I think I've turned the PlayStation on. And then I've plugged my controller into my PC and I've been playing this game on my PC. But at the same time, I'm also operating my PlayStation 4 and I've gone into the PlayStation Store and I've bought a bunch of games. and all these emails coming insane. Through on my phone going, thank you for your purchase, thank you for your purchase, thank you for your purchase. I got a bunch of them refunded. I explained what happened because there's literally a I accidentally bought these games category. So I think this is probably something that's happened before. So I cancelled a bunch of purchases, but they didn't refund me my PlayStation Plus membership. So I now have online PlayStation membership. So I'll be playing Extra Inch Listeners in the near future. And I want to give Bardi a game as well. So I'll see out the season, I think. But I'll also be playing, I'll be playing online because I apparently I purchased that.
Nice. We've got a Twitch channel now. I set it up in readiness for you guys to get involved. Can you play via that?
Awesome. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Sweet. Can you play via that? It's like
I don't know what I'm doing.
I'm speaking to my dad about computers.
I'm so sorry. Twitch is new to me. I'm making a show of myself, aren't I? Okay, our final question today is actually a football question. It's from Harry James. He says, what's your opinion on our centre-back options at the moment? With Jan leaving, we still have Toby, Sanchez, Dyer, Tanganga and Foyth, which seems okay, but our defensive record says otherwise. Is centre-back a pressing need for us moving forward? Start off with you this time, Nathan.
I can't remember. It's been too long since I watched Burst. No, I think Foyth is leaving as well, and I think that Alderweireld is beginning to wind down, certainly. So, yes, I think that centre-back is rapidly becoming a high priority behind our other pre-existing high priorities. I think we've been linked with centre backs. I do believe we're looking at centre backs, and I like Foyt. I would play Foyt. I would bring Foyt through, but that doesn't look like that's happening. Tanganga, I like, but I don't see him sort of becoming a starting centre back quality player, at least not for a while. So I think that centre back is somewhere we need to invest in the near future.
Where do you think Foyth will land, Nate?
La Liga.
What level?
Maybe immediately he takes a step down in order to get regular playing time, but I think even then we're looking at like a Europa League level team, and then I think that his ceiling is like all the way up to the roof, and he can be like, you know, a regular starter at a club of our level within a few years' time.
Yeah, I agree. Bardi, what are your views? Do you think we need to sign a centre back?
Yeah, definitely we need a centre back. I'd like to see Toby stay but take a back seat and then play more Sanchez, give Tanganga a go, and perhaps, I don't think we're going to go out and buy two centre backs, give Dyer more of an opportunity there, but I think definitely we need to sign a left-footed centre back. I'd prefer a left-footed centre back to join that team. I think Foyth will probably end up, I just see him in a Sampdoria shirt and then kind of bouncing around the lower levels of Serie A for a while.
He'd be lovely in Serie A.
Yeah.
I think he in a game that's a bit slower where you get a little more time on the ball, I think he would really excel. I think we do need a centre-back. I think left-sided centre-backs are very difficult to find right now. Mings is one of the obvious options, but he's very injury-prone. Nathan Ake is another, but he's not the biggest. I don't think the selection of left-sided centre-backs is all that good. One thing I would add is that if we have a top-class defensive midfielder, I don't think we'll see our centre-backs get anywhere near as exposed as they have been this season.
Agreed.
And I think you could get by for a season with an aging Toby, a still learning Sanchez, a reconverted Eric Dyer, and a very promising Jaffa Tanganga. And I think in a Mourinho team, which is playing a little bit lower of a block than Pochettino ever played, I think Tanganga will be really good. I'd like to see him start to get trusted in a two at the back rather than on the right of a back four or in a three. So I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued to see what Mourinho does. I don't think we're going to have the money now, after what's happened, to spend big on Upamecano or whoever it might have been. Did I pronounce his name right?
I don't think so. But then I don't know how to say it either.
Write it out, mate.
Yeah, I don't know how to say it. It's one of those that I've only seen written down. I think we might end up going a year without signing a centre-back, to be honest. And I would rather we prioritise a holding midfielder and a right-back. Okay, that's it for this time, but we'll be back soon. Actually, before we go, I've been thinking about some recommendations. We used to do further reading, but this time I'm going to do some isolation recommendations. And this doesn't have to be football related. Bardi, is there anything you've been enjoying whilst in isolation?
Yeah, so I don't know how everyone else feels, but I've got fed up of scrolling through Netflix. It takes forever. You never settle on anything. You always have an argument. So my wife and I, we picked three actors each, and then we went on IMDb and got their top five films of each three actors, and we wrote those films out. We put it into a bucket, and then when we want to watch something which isn't part of our regular TV season, we want to watch a film, we go to that bucket, pull out a film. You're guaranteed to get one, an actor you like, perhaps a film you haven't seen before, and guaranteed no arguments. So that's what we've been doing.
And what bangers have you seen so far?
Forrest Gump. So Tom Hanks was one of them.
That's
so
a winner.
We've watched Forrest Gump. We've watched Inception. We've watched a 1984 Denzel Washington film called A Soldier's Tale, which was interesting.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that.
We've watched The Proposal, which is a Sandra Bullock rom-com, which wasn't too bad. And this evening, we've got Much Ado About Nothing, Kenneth Branagh's Shakespeare take.
Nice.
Denzel Washington is in that. That's his number four film, I think. So I haven't seen that before. And we've also, after that, we've got Sophie's Choice. So I think, which I heard is quite depressing.
Yep. Mm.
So we've got a range of films, and there's no arguments. It's not like, oh, you picked another sci-fi film. There's no arguments here, which is great.
Excellent. How about you, Nathan? What have you been up to? Dungeons and Dragons online?
I do recommend getting online, calling your friends and playing some Dungeons & Dragons. But I've been enjoying the third season of Ozark recently, but you have to get through the first two seasons, which aren't so great, and I'm not sure if I can recommend that process. Better Call Saul is absolutely incredible.
Oh my God,
yeah. What a season. But I'm going to recommend a film I watched recently that I didn't enjoy. I watched Uncut Gems a couple of weeks ago. And
that is
it's so good. It's so well made that I couldn't bear it. It's so well made that I couldn't handle the tension. I couldn't handle the anxiety. But I think that a lot of people will get on with that quite well. I don't know. I guess like art is something that makes you feel something, right? And that like it really, really provoked a feeling in me. It provoked a feeling in me that I didn't enjoy, but it's so well made, I can't not recommend it. It's really, really impressive. It is on Netflix, Uncut Gems.
It's really, really uncomfortable. It's really uncomfortable. You won't enjoy watching it, but there's just something about it that, yeah, every argument, it's a constant arguments throughout, but you got to watch it. It's like a visual and physical experience, that film.
Nice. Ah, you've done a good job selling that one. Funnily enough, I hovered over Ozark earlier, Nathan, and it was between that and Boardwalk Empire as my next box set to start, and I went with Boardwalk Empire, which Bardi tells me was a good choice. So that's my next thing. But I've just finished Sex Education on Netflix. And it took me a few episodes to get into it. And I was telling people, it's good. I'm not sure it's great. I don't find it that funny. And then it just clicked with me. And by the end, I was just so emotionally invested in it. It's a comedy drama. And it stars Gillian Anderson, who was Scully in The X-Files many, many years ago. And I don't remember seeing her in too much since. So it's been really nice to be reacquainted with her. And she's so good in it. She plays a sex therapist. And her son, Otis, who's the lead character in the show, starts giving sex therapy, starts selling sex therapy sessions at his school. And it's a great premise. It's a really beautifully diverse cast. And the story is great. The overarching story is great, but there's also some lovely little character developments and twists along the way. And it is really funny. It's the more you kind of get into the characters, the funnier it is. Eric is my favorite.
He's great. He's so good. Yeah. I took a little while as well to get into it. I think I watched the first episode, wasn't that interested, left it, and then other people were bringing it up in conversation, so I persevered, and yeah, I really enjoyed first and second seasons. It's got this weird sort of vibe to it where like it's set modern, but it looks like the 80s, and it's set in England, but it looks like America. It's really, I don't think it's confused. It's very deliberate, isn't it? I think it's like, is meant to be nostalgic for older people and it's meant to be modern for younger people. And it sort of rides,
that's a really good way of describing
it.
A lot of the music tends to be from the 80s, and there's a lot of kind of 80s references in clothing they're wearing and general, I don't even know how to describe it, aesthetic, I suppose. But you're right, it's really modern, really, really modern. The way it talks about sex is incredibly modern and might be an uncomfortable thing to watch with your children, so I wouldn't recommend doing that. But yeah, really good, really witty and quirky. So yeah, enjoy that. Okay, boys. Good speaking to you both.
You too, mate.
Speak soon.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Barney for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindner for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud, D. Lindner. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.